We'll have now Mr. Idia Kuransagar, who will do the presentation from FAO. Idia Kuransagar, he holds a doctorate degree in microbiology and has been working in the area of aquaculture and fish safety over the 3 decades. Before joining FAO in 2007, he served as a member of the joint FAO-WHO Expert Committee on Microbiological Risk Assessment and was a drafting group member for risk management assessment of Vibrio species. At FAO, he has been working in products, trade and marketing services and contributing to the work in the area of fish quality, safety and risk assessment. He's working closely with the Codex Committee for Fish and Fishery Products and Codex Committee of Food Hygiene. He's currently working on projects to help FAO members countries in developing and implementing good aquaculture practices to minimize use of veterinary drugs and minimize risk due to microbial contamination. So let's give a big applause to Idia Kuransagar, who will do a presentation. Please.
Thank you very much and very good morning to all of you. Now, in the previous panel, there was already some discussion about multiplicity of labels. In this panel, we will discuss about some of the standards, private standards that are now coming up in the market. On one hand, we have the public standards, international standards developed in the Codex Alimentarius, OIE, and other international bodies. And then we have the other private standards which are coming up, and also retailer-based standards. Now, how do we harmonize these, and what are the problems related to these issues? Now, when we think of these standards and regulations affecting trade, we need to remind ourselves about the WTO-SPS agreement, which covers most of these issues. Now, these agreements give the member countries the right to ensure that the consumers are being provided with safe food, and the criteria for safety can be decided by the countries. But there is also an obligation that these criteria are not based arbitrarily or should not be only to protect the domestic producers, but should be based on science. Now, at international level, we have the Codex Alimentarius Commission, OIE, and IPPC, and the WTO makes particular reference to this. So wherever there are disputes, if there are standards set by these international bodies, then they would be considered as international standards. Now, if any country feels that the higher standards are required for the consumers, then they can implement higher standards, provided there is scientific evidence to show that the international standards are not sufficient to protect the consumers. And members are encouraged to promote international harmonization and equivalency agreements. Now, with respect to international standards, the standard setting is done by the Codex Alimentarius Commission. So all the member countries have a role in this. So it's the member countries who decide upon the standards. FAO and WHO provide only the scientific support for Codex Alimentarius Commission. Now, once the standard is set by these bodies, the adoption is to be done by the countries. The national governments have to adopt the standards. And again, implementation is the responsibility of the government agencies. And the conformity assessments, this could be done either by the private sector or by the government agencies, and enforcement is done by the government agencies. Now, when we are talking about standards and food safety, there are a number of issues related to pathogens or related to contaminants which are present in the foods. And I mentioned that there should be scientific basis for this. So how is this scientific basis provided for setting up these international standards? Now, particularly for codex standards, when it comes to issues related to pathogenic microorganisms or chemicals, we have risk assessment procedures which are well laid down. And generally, whenever any food safety issue is pursued, by any country, then the country can bring it to the notice of these bodies through the Codex Alimentarius Commission. And there are commodity bodies, various commodity bodies for fish and fisher products. We have the Codex Committee on Fish and Fisher Products. So if it is agreed by the member countries at these that there is a food safety issue, then the Codex will refer it to FAO-WHO. And FAO and WHO, through the Joint Expert Committee for Microbiological Risk Assessment, will initiate a process of risk assessment. Now, this risk assessment also has a standardized procedure. So there will be a call for data, call for experts. So the best experts from different parts of the world will be put together, and their expert opinion will be taken. Drafting group will be set up. And the procedure for performing these type of risk assessments are also well defined in the Codex. So the drafting committee will perform exposure assessment, hazard characterization, and the reports are available for public review and comments. So it takes nearly 1 year for coming up with this report, which will finally lead to the characterization of the risk. And again, there will be an expert consultation to consider these reports and peer review. And it will then go to the relevant Codex Committee. And if it is accepted by the member countries, then it may form the part of the Codex guidelines or standards. And the report of these expert committees are also made available. So these are issues related to pathogenic microorganisms or chemicals. So when it comes to the antibiotic residues or pesticide residues, we have similarly JACFA, the Joint Expert Committee on Food Additives and Contaminants, which will look at the both the toxicological issues and the epidemiological issues, and then decide what should be the level, an acceptable level, if ADI or acceptable daily intake level can be fixed. And this could be the basis for fixing the maximum residue levels in the foods. So these type of quality and safety issues are dealt with by the Codex Alimentarius Commission, which is again considered an international standard by the WTO. When it comes to animal health issues, OIE has similar standards and guidelines. And now other concerns, consumer concerns, relate to sustainability and certification. So here at international level, we have the international, the FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries and guidelines for eco-labeling, guideline for aquaculture certification. And another consumer issue is the social and environmental concerns. So here we have FAO Code of Conduct for Responsible Fisheries. And we also see the emergence of private standards. So these are some of the examples of private standards, like the Marine Stewardship Council, dealing mainly with sustainability and environment, Global Gap, dealing with food safety, animal health, and environment, Global Aquaculture Alliance, dealing with aquaculture certification, food safety, animal health, environment, and social and ethical issues, ISO, dealing with safety, quality, and environment, and WWF dialogues, standards to be certified by the Aquaculture Stewardship Council. And we also see increasing role of retailers in fish trade. So some of the data with respect to some of the countries are here. For example, in Italy, 61% share in seafood trade, and in Spain, 43% by supermarkets and hypermarkets. And also some of the big retailers like Walmart, they have pledged to buy only ACC-certified farm-raised products. Similarly, restaurants, garden restaurants, require all farm-raised shrimp to be certified by ACC. So these type of requirements are coming up in the market. Now, what are the reasons for the emergence of these private standards and requirements? Now, we have a shifting of responsibility of food safety from the governments in the 90s to the private the food business operator. Now it is recognized that food safety is responsibility of everybody in the food chain, and it's not just the producer or the processor who is responsible, but everybody in the food chain need to take care. So there is a need to demonstrate due diligence in the food chain. So one of the ways by which this is demonstrated is by these various procedures which are laid down and standards set by these private operators. So the private operators have the responsibility, so they have to demonstrate that they are producing safe food. Now another reason for the emergence of these standards could be the global sourcing. So the fish which is consumed here might have been produced in any part of the world, and there is need for improved supply chain management. And also there is increased consumer interest in food safety. There's a lot of information available in the internet and various sources, so consumers are concerned about it. There are a lot of outbreaks still occurring, food-related outbreaks still occurring, which raises consumer concern about safety. And also consumers are concerned about environment and sustainability, and there is also a lot of information out there about these issues which the consumers have to confront. Now, what are the concerns about these private standards? Now, some of these standards claim that they are, or they provide greater safety as compared to the public standards like the codex. And many of these are highly prescriptive. Now, in codex guidelines, you have only outcomes mentioned, what should be the result of your performance, and how you do it is left to you, the food business operator. So it's not prescriptive, because codex considers that there are diverse ways of producing food and processing food. So what is required is the outcome and not the way you do it. But many of these private standards tend to be more prescriptive. And then the cost of certification, requirements of multiple certifications, and impact on access to markets and public health, transparency, involvement of stakeholders in decision making. There are always concerns that some of these standards are set without consulting the stakeholders, and the legitimacy of private food standards and their potential to undermine public food safety regulatory system. So when we already have these codex standards and various national standards, now does it mean that the food which is meeting the national standard is unsafe? So these type of questions will arise. Now when we talk about stringency, there are different types of standards. Some of the standards are numerical, for example, the number of bugs or the levels of a chemical that may be allowed in a food. And there may be also process standards that stipulate elements of good practice in the management of all operations along the food chain and procedures for establishing the compliance with these. Now, in general, private standards do not set additional requirements, numerical standards. There are no examples in fisheries, but there are some examples in other sectors, like in agriculture. There are some examples of some of the pesticide residue requirements, and also in poultry there are some requirements of some of the microorganisms. So in some of the private standards, these additional numerical requirements are also coming up. Now if these type of numerical requirements come up, then what is the basis for this? Now as I explained, in the case of codex, there is an elaborate process of risk assessment performed before any of these numbers of microorganisms or levels of chemicals are decided. Now, how do these private standard-setting bodies decide on these numbers? And another issue related to these private standards is that we still see import alerts due to presence of certain microorganisms which are not included in the public regulations, government regulations. So these are due to some of the perceptions in the private sector. So we see import alerts due to certain microorganisms like Vibrios and Listeria. Now, in the case of listeria, this is a good example to show the relation between public perception of risk and the scientific assessment of risk and how standards can be based on scientific assessment of risk. Now, in the mid-80s, when listeria was recognized as a foodborne pathogen, then there was a lot of concern and there was zero tolerance in many countries. And then the industry realized that it is not possible to achieve this zero tolerance. Then how can we protect the consumers? So there was a few WHO risk assessment, and this showed that it is possible to differentiate products which are ready to eat and those which are going to be cooked before consumption. And even in ready to eat products, you can differentiate between products where the growth of the bug can occur, and if the growth cannot occur, then certain number can be tolerated. So these type of issues came up from this risk assessment, and based on the risk assessment, now a criteria has been fixed by the codex. So sometimes the consumers may be confused, because when they see reports of outbreaks, then they think, okay, the product should be free from this microorganism. But then it's possible, is it possible to produce food without these bugs, if these microorganisms are already present in the environment, and to what level can we go with good practice, and what is required to be achieved for consumer safety. Now, another issue where you see stringency, differences in stringency between these standards and codex, is with respect to traceability. Now, according to codex, traceability is the ability to follow the movement of food through specified stages of production, processing, and distribution. And even ISO 22000 requires the traceability system shall be able to identify incoming material from immediate suppliers and the initial distribution route of the end product. Whereas some private standards require companies to be able to trace all raw materials to be used in their operation from source and the end product throughout the distribution chain. So you can see the difference in the stringency between the codex, ISO, and some of the private standards. And as I mentioned earlier, some of these private standards are prescriptive rather than outcome-based, and codex standards are based on the consideration that there are different ways of producing food and also different ways of processing, so member countries may have different requirements. So ultimately, they need to achieve certain goal, but how they achieve this goal can be left to them. And national governments and food business operators play a role in translating these international guidance into actionable and auditable provisions. Prescriptive provisions can inhibit innovation within the industry and also add costs. Now, what is the cost of certification? Now, with respect to some of the certifications, some information is available. So there is a processing fee, there's an inspection fee, and this inspection fee could be a daily consultation fee ranging from $400 to $800. And the travel and accommodation for auditors need to be provided, and costs to bring about changes in infrastructure and culture practices to meet the standard in the case of aquaculture. And producers need to comply with importing country national standards or regional standards, like, for example, EU standards, and that of the retailers. So the producers have this dual requirement. And are there benefits of compliance? Now, one argument is that compliance with these private standards could provide access to new markets or consolidation of position in the existing markets. And also possibly the product will be safe, so there should be reductions in the detention, rejections in international border inspection posts, but we don't have data to show this. Is there a price premium? Again, we don't have data on this. And what is the investment required in technology capacity building? Now, OIE conducted some study with respect to impact on trade. They asked the member countries whether these standards could create problems. Now, if you see the response from the member countries, so developed countries, 84% said they agree that it create problem, and developing countries, 80% said this would create problems. And with respect to benefits, developed countries said saw more benefits. 87% said it could create benefits, whereas less number of developing countries saw benefits out of meeting these requirements. And similarly, there is an argument that these private standards can be useful aid for the implementation of official standards. So again, this is the result of OIE survey. Again, developed countries, 89% said they agreed that private standards could lead to or they could be a useful aid for implementation of official standards, whereas the less proportion of developing countries felt this way. So there are a number of questions still. Is the growing importance of private standard due to failure of public standards enforced by government? So are the government standards not sufficient to protect the consumers, or are these private standards a marketing tool? Now, codex standards are based on risk assessments. So if the standards are more stringent, then what is the rationale for these higher standards? And can these higher standards like zero tolerance be achieved by good practices? And are there any examples of scientific risk assessments performed by private standard setting agencies? And are the foods complying with national standard but not private standard unsafe? So some of the issues and concerns are exclusion of small producers. So we already had discussion about this in the previous panel. So particularly with respect to aquaculture, there are a number of large number of small producers. Will they be able to comply, or will they be excluded if these private requirements come into force? There could be a trade barrier. And in the absence of regulatory framework, companies with market power may manipulate prices in the supply chain, and multiplicity of standards claiming to achieve the same goal could confuse the consumer. Now, another issue is regarding eco-labeling, because here again there are schemes which are promoted by non-government organizations and industry bodies. So these came because of the concern on sustainability of fish stocks, and also by the governments and retailers. So these are some of the issues with eco-labeling schemes. Again, costs, and some data to show that 62% of successful labels have been funded by industry alone, 28% combination of industry and government external grant, 10% government alone. And the data regarding market penetration again shows that it is concentrated in certain markets, and there's still question about the price premium and consistency in certification. Now, based on some of these issues, the panel would like to propose some recommendations from this conference. Now, one is regarding the strengthening capacity of developing countries. So there's a need to strengthen capacity of developing countries to meet codex standards and guidelines. Now, meeting codex standard and guideline may lead to a reduction in some of the drivers that are responsible for the proliferation of the private standards. Now, the second recommendation is that there is a need for dialogue between public and private sector standards setting bodies. And already within Codex, there is a mechanism for involving the private standard setting bodies, and they should be encouraged to participate in Codex process and harmonize the standards with the Codex standards. And there is a need for technical and scientific capacity building in developing countries to demonstrate equivalence of food safety management measures. As we have seen in WTO equivalence is given importance, so if you can demonstrate that what you are doing is equivalent and is achieving the same goal, then it is accepted as providing the same level of protection. And there should be increased stakeholder participation, particularly of small producers and small food business operators in the process of development of private standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Iria. I would like to invite the person that participated in the panel to come forward. And so we have now, again, the same road of questions and comments that we have from you. So anybody that participated in the panel that would be present in the room, please, can you come forward? Okay. So I'll open the floor for questions. Maybe Ana Maria, if you want to present yourself, please. Ana Maria.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ana Maria Tavarria. I worked with an American company, one of the major seafood distributors for the retail sector in the United States.
Thank you. So I'll open the floor for questions or comments that anybody can have in relation to this certification process, which is obviously a trend that has been going through it. It's very important. And that everybody's kind of have, there's a lot of different initiatives going through at this point as we speak, to put it that way. So any comments or reflections from anybody from the room that want to be shared with the panel or the expert or idea that has done this presentation? Yes, yourself, then you. Thank you.
Dominique Gauthier of Aquastor. I have a question to Ana Maria regarding these question marks here on the screen and price premiums for labels. It seems to me that when I read the news on the internet, American retailers are very clear that there will be no price premium for certified product. Mm. Sustainability should be achieved at a very competitive price. So what's your feeling about that?
Well, I must say I agree with most of them. From my experience in purchasing and selling, I don't see an advantage in price premium, I mean, with the certification. However, it does have an advantage within the retail customer, but not to the final consumer. The price will not be higher to the consumer and will not be higher to the producer either. But those producers which will be certified will have a priority within the customer base of for the retailer. Mm-hmm. The price premium will still be oriented towards the service of the supplier and the quality of the product, more than the certification, I must say.
Yes, thank you.
I'm Masahiro Miyazaki from Atomi University of Japan. I have a question about Marine Stewardship Council. It deals only with fish from wild. Do you think there is any conflict between MSC and aquaculture product, a certified aquaculture?
India?
Well, it's two different types of certification. MSC is for wild, and the other certification would be for aquaculture. Today in some stores, at least one of them, our customers, they can clearly see the MSC certification for wild. And although it's not as all customers are aware of that, people are learning about this kind of certification and say in 5 years or 3 years, the customer will be also aware of these aquaculture certifications. So it's a whole process of educating the customer. But they're not related. I mean, they won't compete. I mean, it's what they compete is the origin of the product, but not the certification.
I have Courtney there, and then yourself.
Thank you. Sorry to ask another awkward question.
No, it's okay.
One of the things I noticed missing on the costing of that was the use of the brand. And that I've been told that as much as 0.5% of the value sold with a brand label on it is required to be passed over to those who are recording the certificate.
Hmm.
In other words, that if you're going to have an ASC brand on your product, you're going to be paying even more than just the audit, yeah, which is an enormous amount of money going in. And I think that the other point, and I would put this forward to the panel as a potential recommendation, is that such certification on sustainability in terms of fish farming will affect the feed supply. The feed supply is an extremely large part of the fish farmers' operating costs. So if you're going to have feed supply being certified, the producer being certified, but that the return of that, the benefit of that, is actually going to be at those who sell at the final end, in other words, those who are using the brand, those are the people who will actually be getting the price premium, rather than, should we say, the producer or the feed supplier.
Hmm.
I think one of the recommendations that you could come up with is that such certifying bodies also take the responsibility of assuring that there is a distribution of benefits that is equitable to those who are further down the value chain.
Thank you. Any comment on that, Hiryas? Yeah, that's okay.
No, I think, that's a good recommendation, so we'll add that to the list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question there, then the lady yourself.
Yeah, this is Umesh from India. My question is to Anna Maria. So now I would like to know what is the percentage of certified aquaculture product in the market, and unless there is some differentiation between the certified and non-certified product, so how we are, you know, so the producers are going to comply over the period of, you know, so next few years. For this, you know, so certification standards. So they may not find any incentive to, you know, sort out this certification unless there's a differentiation.
I think, in a way, it's it would be important, it would be relevant at the time this happens. For instance, in the salmon industry right now, there is a shortage of supply from Chile. And say all these suppliers were certified today, it would be a difficult position for the retailer to get the right supplier with the right certification, because the certification is not for the industry, it's for each company who's willing to take it. But say in about 5 years, the production will increase and the game will be the other way around. The suppliers will want to be certified and will want to be in the game and be in the retail stores. So I think it has to do with the time and where things happened.
Yes, I have the... And then there is your lady.
Thank you. I'm Johan from Fish Pro Tank, and we are actually farmers, and we sell our fish in Malaysia. Just a couple of comments and maybe a question. The comment is that in Malaysia, the environment of certification through all the different government bodies is very confusing for the producer. And so we find it very difficult to get a certification. And as it happened, Carrefour entered into the market and started their Carrefour quality line, CQL. And they went around and checked the producers. Mm-hmm. And we were able to certify under the Carrefour quality line. And that gave us a premium. So actually, certification for us meant a premium for our product. Of course, it also increases the cost. What it meant for small producers, that a organization like Carrefour, which is the second largest retailer in the world, has helped us a lot to set a certain standard. Not only that, but also to apply the same standard to a number of farms in different locations that we operate, and all under an audit system which is actually enforced upon us by our Carrefour, but which helped us to be better producers. So we see a very great advantage in this private certification through the retailers. The problem that we have as small producers is that there are too many different standards everywhere in the world, and that it is impossible and too costly for us even to get certifications. Even, you know, we talk to marine stewardship, we talk to GAP, you know, the cost of certifying under European conditions, the premiums that are there for producers in Asia, which are basically low-cost producers, are prohibitive. So if I could make a recommendation for the panel to look at, can we, out of this conference, get something that would provide standards, general standards that give guidelines for everyone, including the small producers? Yeah. Thank you.
Any comment, Tom? Sir?
Of course, it's good to hear that there have been some benefits of complying with this certification. But only thing is, what is the relation between this certification and some of the national certifications? Because some countries in this region have introduced their own national schemes of certification for aquaculture. I don't know in Malaysia, but yesterday there was a side event where we, not a day before yesterday, there was a side event where we heard about the situation in Thailand. They have their own certification, national certification schemes. It's good to see market advantage, but only thing we need to see what is the relation between that and the national certification, how these two things can go together.
That's exactly the problem, is that national certification, first of all, it is too slow, it takes too many committees to go through, and is too general, and often not acceptable to the retailers, because they look more at the worldwide approach. And Carrefour want their product to be of a standard that is equal to what they would have in Europe. Now, the national certifications now, quite often take in consideration some of the constraints that maybe lower grade producers have to achieve. So I would really promote the idea of the private certification to retailers. And there's one thing that we must remember. You don't make money growing fish. You only make money selling fish. And if you don't work with the retailers, you can have any certification that you want, but if the retailers do not sell your fish, and if they cannot obtain a premium for your fish, you're not in business.
Mm. Okay, thank you. Point
may I add just a small comment regarding that? Yeah, there are even us as in the retail sales sector. I've been also myself a producer for 8 years before coming into the retail sector, and my small advice would be that. Our customers, the retails, are going to be considering the any certification that meets the standards of the GFSI, which is composed by 7 major retailers in the world. So if you get certified, if you somehow manage to get certified with the standards that meet these standards, you're covered for a lot of several markets. So if I can get to the standards, so it's very kind of basic, and then you're covered.
Thank you. I have a lot of requests for questions, so I have the lady here, have yourself, we have you in the back, and you here, so there I have at least 4. So try to be brief, please, in comment or question.
Well, this is a very thought-provoking discussion, actually. It brings up so many questions. I would have wanted to comment on the national certification, but I come from an age where enforcement and certification were separate. But that's not my comment, really. I would like to expand on the comment by the gentleman with regards to a recommendation to somehow share the benefits of this. The biggest problem I see, and I've done a lot of audits and a lot of assessments with regards to this, whether farmers or fishermen. Good example is what happened in British Columbia this year when there was a glut of salmon, sockeye salmon, wild, which was unexpected, 93 years since this has happened. And who benefited from this? Whether it's certified product or not was not the issue, but the biggest profits were not made by the fishermen. And the biggest effort was made by the fishermen. And so I think there's a disproportionate, even if it filters down. I mean, what somebody said about not giving premiums, it's very true from what I've seen. And I think that's unfortunate, because this premium should be given by the retailers who benefit most from this. At the same time, the farmers who work hardest for this have to get the most benefit out of the whole process.
Thank you. I have yourself a question.
Mohan from Naga. This is not a question, just a comment.
I think there is a big role for people to provide their comments to the standard setting process, because the standards that are set are not set on stone. It's not permanent. That can, if you take the example of OIE, which sets the standard for aquatic animal health, the crustacean diseases, for example, in the beginning, almost all the crustacean diseases were in the standards list. But it took time, especially for the regional advisory group of NARC and others, to bring it to the OIE's notice, like diseases like Moronon baculovirus, which is very common. Now if you see the new list, MBV is deleted from the standards requirement list. So what my comment is, the standards are there, but they are also they can be changed depending on the feedback and the scientific validity of the feedback. So there is a good example from a public standard setting body like OIE. If you look at the revised list, a lot of changes, both for fish diseases and for crustacean diseases. Many standards have been deleted, some new have been added. But the mechanism to seek the feedback should be well structured and should be participatory. Unfortunately for OIE, I do not know much about Codex. The feedback that comes from the developing part of the world is almost negligible, because there are no good mechanisms to get the feedback channel back to the OIE standard setting process. Thank you.
Thank you. Yourself in the back there, please.
Myself, Dhirendra Thakur from Asian Institute of Technology. I have a question or also comment, like the panel presented about the regulatory framework. We need some kind of regulatory framework for the implementation of all these standard. And from audience, I also heard that the comment was that the national schemes or standards are very slow. Yes, indeed, they are slow, but they are very robust. So now the question, my submission is that how we can get rid of the many private selfish certification scheme who are just in the market to make money. Who is paying? Farmers are paying money. 4 years before, we were confused that there are many certification scheme. Still the same is going on. Everyone has set up a standard, very robust standard. But who is going to look into the capacity of those certifiers? Are they capable to certify the farm in Thailand? Or the Department of Fisheries is more capable? So it's all about the matter of partnership. If you are not capable, then you are doing wrong. You are just earning money for the interest of your business. The farmers are not getting benefit. They are paying the more money. So probably the panel should look into the aspect of national schemes. And is there a possibility that all the certification scheme can be more harmonized, bring under one umbrella with some regulatory framework? Thank you.
Thank you. Any comment, please?
Yeah, of course. This is one of the aspects covered in the recommendation, one of the recommendations that I read out. So, and in Codex is already looking into this. Codex has prepared a paper on private standards, and Codex is trying to involve the private standard setting bodies in the dialogue. And there is provision in the Codex system for private participation also. NGOs can participate, consumer organizations can participate. So there is a provision for getting feedback and also for the participation of these private standard setting bodies. ISO is a member of Codex. So there is a mechanism, and Codex is trying to involve and try to get private standard setting bodies in so that we can discuss these issues and try to get harmonization. And also with respect to Mohan's comment, I would like to add that in Codex system, there is always a provision to involve developing countries. So there is a Codex Trust Fund, which supports participation of people from developing countries. And in the last Codex committee meeting on fish and fishery products, there were 40 participants from developing countries supported by the Codex Trust Fund. So there is also a mechanism to involve developing countries in the participation of this Codex process of standard setting. Plus, the countries can provide inputs through their Codex contact points. So all these standards are sent to the countries, to their contact points, and comments are welcome. So there are two rounds of comments involved before any standard or guideline is accepted by the Commission. Thank you.
Thank you.
By listening to the comments from the different people here regarding the having just one common standard, I think it's going to be difficult because, like the gentleman said, there are private interests. And if I were a producer, what I would do is try to approach my main customers and ask them what are they going to be accepting as certified. And then you go through the program and focus on what you need and not what everybody's offering. Hmm. Otherwise, I mean, there are so many bodies there certified, and it's going to be a nightmare. Hmm. And regarding the value, the premium price, I think it can be a little bit frustrating from the producer point of view. But I think these new certifications are just a result of the development of the industry. Back, 15 years ago, let's say, when we started, all the producers were required, say, 20 years ago, the hazard program. It's a whole evolution of the industry. And in maybe 5 years, it's going to be a natural thing to be certified for whatever needs to be certified. But I think the prime price still has to come from the attributes inherited to the product. Mm-hmm. You have to, with the basic characteristics of the product and not because of the certification. And from the retail point of view, I think one of the main aspects for the from a prime price would be service.
Yeah, thank you. I have yourself there, then you and the lady there. Yes.
Hi, I'm Arun from India. Just a reflection. Of late, the large companies, especially the food companies worldwide, especially I can say Nestle, Unilever, and PepsiCo, Ecom, they have realized in other food sectors like coffee, cocoa, potato, they have realized the importance of sustainable sourcing and coexistence with the small-scale farmers for their own, you know, to maintain their brand equity in the mm-hmm. markets.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen what happened with the palm oil in Indonesia and Unilever's product with this Lux soap. So they are very careful. Now they are working heavily on how to work with the small-scale farmers and other farmers also with their corporate social responsibility funds. Probably in aquaculture, in seafood sector also, the large companies at least, they have to try to open their purse from the corporate social responsibility funds. Hmm. So that is my opinion.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yourself, please.
Really, just a follow-on point from that. I think we've been hearing there are communication issues throughout the value chain. What's the consumer want? What are they expecting? What are they expecting from governments, from international organizations, and from retailers? Clearly, retailers think they're in a good position to do a lot of that communication. That's one of their roles. But I think it's interesting from a country like the UK that's just coming out of its recession that the labeling that seems to have held up best is the label that's communicated the value to the producer, i.e. fair trade. And maybe there's a glimpse of hope there that actually it's the consumer who's connecting there with an ideal and a set of values that they want to pay for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, you, lady, please.
Thank you very much. I'm Tomoko Ishibashi from OIE Regional Representation for Asia and the Pacific. Regarding the comment from Mohan and the comment from FAO about the standard setting, public international standard setting procedures, I just wanted to comment about OIE standards. Regarding the speed, sometimes we could develop a new standard within a year, but it may take, you know, a couple of years. That the usually it's 2 year cycle to get more information and participation from member countries and other stakeholders. But the that might be some concern from the private sector about our speed. Nevertheless, that is the current situation, but we could develop a standard within a year or so. And the second thing is about the participation. It is unfortunately true that compared to our animal health code for terrestrial animal, the participation to our code on aquatic animal health is less. That is true. It's new and less interest among the veterinary services. So However, we put the new draft on the internet, and we can accept comments not only from the national government but also from industry organizations and expert, you know, independent experts. So please visit our website so that you know you can make, send a comment. And also that OIE created aquatic animal focal points, because quite often the veterinary service doesn't cover aquatic animal health. Therefore, OIE designate ask the national delegate to designate one focal point for aquatic animal health, so that we can communicate directly to the different part of the government. And we also convene a regional workshop to train those focal points. So all the information I can provide you more, but these are the comments from the OIE side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have another question here, please. It's okay. Please.
Hi, my name is Kevin. I'm from the private sector. I'm based in Thailand. I would like to ask from FAO the initiatives from FAO in terms of, number one, a lot of work have been put into codex to set standards, as well as responsible fisheries, code of conduct as well. And I think that's good enough as a very good standard for all to follow. The issue that we all have today is that if all the governments are able to act on those standards and enforce it, and also cascade it to the farmers for them to practice it, which they will, there will be no need for certification. All right? Now, in the meantime, before that happens, 10, 20 years or 30 years from now, whatever that may be, certification provides an alternative, both in terms to meet consumer or customer needs versus or concerns versus the real issue behind sustainability of seafood or aquaculture or wild capture fisheries. Last week, I was in the tuna conference in Bangkok, and I raised the same question to FAO in terms of there's a lot of certification available today. It's confusing both to consumers who knows a bit about it but do not know the whole picture. It's also very confusing for producers, FMCGs, as well as to the poor farmers, right? So can FAO then police or at least endorse to say that, look, these are the certification bodies that follows the code of conduct or follow responsible fisheries.
Hmm.
And it's regulated, say, once every 2 or 3 years. And whoever wants to go into certification as a mode of interim before it becomes a legal compliance, not on voluntary basis on most aspects, then I guess everybody along the whole supply chain as well as the public would be very clear and transparent in how all this works towards the final goal. Now, everybody is going towards all these different directions, and it's really confusing. It will continue to be confusing. And, you know, it's a bit of a shame or waste to see that all the good work done by FAO, as well as WWF, as well as the Codex panels, to go down the drain, where nobody wants to take the next step to say that, look, this is how we're going to endorse it, and these are the certification that you can work with. All right, so I hope FAO can take the next step forward rather than let the whole market dictate itself, which is going to be, you know, a bit of a chaos for the next 10 years.
Okay, thank you. You want to comment on it?
Yeah, there are a number of mechanisms in FAO to support countries for implementation of code of conduct for responsible fisheries, and also help with these certification issues. Now, from time to time, we organize workshops. There are regional workshops. This year, we had one in Asia and one in Latin America. So generally, we have in regions helping mainly to implement this code of conduct for responsible fisheries on different issues. And I think on code of conduct and responsible fish trade, some work was done. Probably Auden will talk about it. And we also have what are called technical cooperation projects. where we try to strengthen capacity in the countries to implement these FAO guidelines and certification guidelines. So some projects are operating in some of the countries in Asia. This again depends on the request coming from the countries and the prioritization. Now, some of the countries have to prioritize different sectors of, say, food production, agriculture, animal husbandry, fisheries. So if this is prioritized by the country and comes to FAO as a request from the country, then FAO will implement a technical cooperation project. And some of these projects are already going on in some of the countries in this region. So these are some of the mechanisms. Maybe Auden will add to that.
Thank you. Yes, FAO has also, of course, developed guidelines for how to set eco-labeling, both for marine fisheries, for inland fisheries, and then there are draft guidelines now for aquaculture products. But FAO will not endorse or disclaim any schemes that are out there. We will leave that to others to certify whether a particular scheme adhere to the FAO guidelines. However, FAO has been asked to develop a benchmarking framework to enable you to endorse or not endorse certain schemes. And in fact, next month in Rome, we'll have an expert consultation to develop those and benchmarks to allow others to certify and endorse schemes.
Thank you. I have one last question and then we'll have to close.
Blaise Kumlangan from the FAO Legal Office. And in fact, I just wanted to respond to our colleague who raised the question of policing. FAO is not in the business of policing. It helps its members, which are states, come together to discuss burning issues that are important to the world's food production. And then they can come up with guidelines and recommendations, but it is up to the countries to implement them because they are the ones who have the enforcement mechanisms.
Thank you. Okay. So as if there are no more comments, then we'll have to close here. We have half an hour for a coffee break, and then we'll come back for the last part of the morning. Thank you very much for your participation. Big applause for all the panel participants. Thank you.